Joining the Red River Farm Network is National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Danielle Beck. And Danielle, a couple different items we're going to touch on today here. Not only is the most recent COVID relief package top of mind for the cattle industry right now, but the newest piece of information released was the new dietary guidelines. And of course, beef was included in those guidelines, which we're happy to see. So I guess, what's your initial reaction to the new guidelines and what really is highlighted for beef in there?
I think my initial reaction is, whew, thank God it's over. I'm kidding. But, you know, really, honestly, this has been a couple years in the making, and NCBA has been engaging since day one because our top priority has been to protect the scientific credibility of the dietary guidelines. You know, the dietary guidelines serve as the cornerstone for all federal nutrition policies and programs, so they're really, really important. And we know that the science is on our side when it comes to beef's role in a healthy diet. And so really, as long as the scientific credibility of that process was protected, we knew we would fare well in the end result. And today, with the announcement of the 2020 to 2025 DGAs, I think we can feel pretty good about the process and that final outcome. You know, there's a lot of room for growth when it comes to the dietary choices that Americans are making. There's always room for improvement. But what's really critically important here is that we get back to the basics first. You know, a practical approach was securing flexible guidelines that encourage the public to really focus on the basics that matter, like eating more vegetables and other nutrient-rich foods like lean meat. And what we saw, you know, in this 2020 DGA release was a really practical set of recommendations centered around four key tenets, which is, you know, following a healthy dietary pattern at every stage of life. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on a healthy diet. Customizing and enjoying nutrient-dense foods and beverages that reflect personal preferences, cultural traditions, and budgetary considerations. A one-size-fits-all approach really isn't practical when it comes to, you know, nutrition advice for the entirety of the U.S. population. And so you have to take these recommendations and make them work for you personally. And we know that nutrient dense foods like beef, you know, there really isn't a more nutrient dense food from a, you know, a protein perspective, whether it's an animal-based protein or a plant-based protein that delivers in the way that beef does. And so, overall, I think we fared very well in this process.
And so as you mentioned at the start, Danielle, you talked about how these guidelines really help those who are decision makers in the U.S., our lawmakers, people of Congress. Do you have any examples or can provide information as to exactly, you know, how these dietary guidelines are used in the decision-making process when it comes to policy?
You know, every federal nutrition assistance program, from supplemental nutrition assistance, women and infants and children, the WIC program, our school meals, those are all centered around the dietary advice that can be found in the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. In the past, I think we've seen topics that fall outside the realm of sound nutritional science creep their way into the nutrition space, sustainability being one, I think, that's impacted us, you know, in the last process. And also when we see efforts like implementing meatless Mondays in schools or in the meals that we feed our military, but, you know, recognizing that animal source foods such as beef are really a fundamental food, no matter what stage of life that you're in or age group you're in, having that reinforced in the DGAs is really important when we do end up having to push back against efforts that really don't focus on the nutritional benefit for Americans.
Yes. Well, I know when it comes to decision making, you know, decisions were made, a lot of them, within the past couple weeks as it relates to cattle industry policy. And so, Danielle, bring us up to speed on what is included for cattlemen and women in the latest COVID relief package.
Sure. You know, Christmas came early when the House released their details of a $1.4 trillion FY21 omnibus and a corresponding $900 billion COVID relief package. And, you know, that the package passed through both chambers of Congress pretty quickly, all things considered. But we were waiting up until the beginning of this week, wondering whether or not President Trump would, in fact, sign this package into law. thankfully he did. And so I think there's a lot to look forward to if you're a cattle producer out there. The COVID provisions specifically will be making supplemental CFAP payments to cattle producers, which is the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. Some folks are calling it a CFAP 3, but really it's going to function more like a CFAP 1 Part 3. And it's really intended to make whole some of those producers who were left out in the cold because they experienced pretty significant losses after that April 15th cutoff date. We are still waiting to see what's going to happen with USDA and how that's going to be rolled out. You know, unfortunately, when you wait until last minute to turn in the term paper, you can't expect your professor to get you the grades back overnight. You know, most folks were hopefully enjoying Christmas with their families. And so I think USDA took some well-deserved time off, but we're looking forward to working with them after the first of the year as they look to roll out CFAP 1 Part 3, as I'm calling it now. But, you know, there are also several other different provisions that I think will likely be punted to the next administration, but we'll see coming. You know, most importantly, something that NCBA has been working on for quite some time are grants for improvements to meat and poultry facilities to allow for interstate shipment. The COVID relief package provided $60 million to make facility upgrades and planning grants to existing meat and poultry processors in order to help them move over to the federal inspection system and be able to sell their products across state lines. And the bill also requires USDA to work with states and report on ways to improve the existing cooperative interstate shipment program. You know, hook space, increased processing capacity is something that, you know, we have been focused on even prior to COVID, but certainly calls for more competition in the processing sector, more processing capacity. It's something that, you know, we heard heightened calls for during the height of this pandemic. And it's something that we take seriously enough that we've adopted it as part of our long range plan. We have been saying, you know, I think since some of these legislative proposals that we've worked on have really garnered attention, that we can't afford to wait for the farm bill process to kick off and for the authorization of a new farm bill. We need this relief. We need more processing capacity sooner rather than later. And we're really grateful that Congress heard the calls that we have been spearheading, because I think this is a really positive step in the right direction for us.
Yes, and speaking of steps in the right direction, we're taking a step in a new direction entering 2021 here in just a few short days. And, you know, the legislative process doesn't stop there. We're going to be entering and working in with a new administration. So tell me more about how NCBA is shifting their focus moving into 2021.
You know, I think our focus at the start of any new administration, it's really the same template. We've got a lot of educating to do, but we look at it as an opportunity. You know, the cattle industry here in the United States has a great story to tell. You know, our producers are the heart of this country. They're the backbone of food and agriculture here in the United States. And when it comes to issues like nutrition, sustainability, I mean, you name it, we really have an important role to play. We're part of a solution, not the problem. You know, there with any new face, we have some educating to do, but we're looking forward to doing that. And we're already starting to have those conversations. So, you know, we're confident that we're going to have some great working relationships in this new Congress and the new administration, and really looking forward to building on successes that we've had in the past.